On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
Welcome, this is The Naturalist. Wonderful music as always, thanks to Jack. This is Carol Butler. We are without Bernie Wides today. He is away, but he'll be back next week. But my guest is Ariana Rickard, who is the science coordinator of the Discovery Room at the American Museum of Natural History. And she's going to talk today about her experience in the Peace Corps, which is interesting. She reminded me that there's no upper age limit to the Peace Corps. It was established in 1961. And I, of course, was fascinated by the idea. But shortly after 1961, I was having a life and not free to do something like that. But it's not too late, as you said. Currently, there are over 8,000 people serving in 76 countries, so the program is alive and well, although it sort of changed, right? It was bigger. I think it's smaller now than it had been originally.
Yeah, there are some countries that the Peace Corps was in, and now they're not in. There are some new countries that Peace Corps is in. And the other interesting thing about the origin of the Peace Corps, you know that story about John F. Kennedy and he was campaigning for the presidency?
Why don't you tell us?
So this was in 1960 and he was going across the country campaigning and he stopped at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and there were students who were so excited about the campaign, and they stayed up to see him, so they stayed up till 2 a.m. for his arrival. And he got there and he saw the large group of students and he was inspired too, and so he gave a speech on the steps of the Michigan Union, and he challenged the students. He asked them if they were willing to serve their country in the cause of peace by living and working in these developing countries, and from that came the Peace Corps, an agency that is still devoted to peace and friendship around the world.
Okay.
And I went to the University of Michigan for grad school and then did the Peace Corps after that.
Oh, so great.
There's a legacy of the Peace Corps at the University of Michigan.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. So it was established in 1961. So this is the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps this year. So you've probably heard more about the Peace Corps this year than in previous years. So 50 years, 200,000 volunteers have served in 139 different host countries.
Right. Now, is this, you said in your, and you made a note here, that volunteers are paid $7,425 before taxes after 27 months of service.
So that's what's called the readjustment allowance.
Okay.
So after your service, the Peace Corps gives you this money after your service.
Okay.
But some people, I don't know what the statistic is, but some people don't finish the full 27 months, but they will still get some of that readjustment allowance, which is allocated to how many months you served in the Peace Corps.
All right. But otherwise, when you're serving, how does it work?
So they pay you, it depends on where you are and within the country, whether you're in the city or in the rural areas. So they pay you like a living wage because you are a volunteer, and they're paying you so that you can live like the people in the community where right. you are.
Do you have to find your own room? Well, I should say Ariana was in Ecuador, so
yeah.
we'll talk specifically, but just sort of in a general way. Do you? Do they find room and board? Do they provide room and board?
Yeah, so generally they're going to... So the full Peace Corps is 27 months. You arrive in country. You have about 10 weeks of training, and then you go out to your site. And so... At least my experience in Ecuador, then the Peace Corps Ecuador agency will have already gone to these sites, mm-hmm. figured out who your partner is going to be in your community, and what sort of projects you might be working on, and what the housing situation is mm-hmm. for you. So they will try to find the housing and secure that for you before you get to your site.
Do you stay with a family?
It depends. Some people stayed with host families. I was sort of in between. I was staying in an apartment that had a courtyard, and so there was a family across the way from me. So it was ideal for me because I value my independence, and it was hard for me during training because we did stay with host families during training, and you'd eat all the meals, and I just sometimes wanted to eat what I wanted to eat, and to not have control over my meals was difficult for me. Mm. But then at the same time, you have the safety of the family. You are being forced to speak the native language, so you acquire the language skills quicker than if you're, you know, by yourself or hanging out with other American friends. But having the family across the courtyard, I had someone who was, you know, keeping an eye on me, and I could go to if I had any problems, and they were friendly to me and helped me feel more comfortable mm-hmm. in the site.
Do you choose your site based on the language that you speak? You studied Spanish in school, I assume?
Yeah, so that's also an interesting thing about the Peace Corps. The Peace Corps, since it's so diverse and all over the world, everyone's experience is going to be different. Mm. So, and how you get into the Peace Corps is also maybe different from my experience. So, the Peace Corps mostly now is in Africa. So, for all these host countries, there are 37% of volunteers are serving in Africa now, and then 24% Latin America, Eastern Europe 21%, and then below that there's Asia, the Caribbean, North Africa, Middle East, and the Pacific Islands. So originally, you know, they asked me if I wanted to go to Africa. It's mm-hmm. the biggest contingent. But for me, that was too far away, and I didn't think I could handle it. So I asked for Latin America, and they told me that my Spanish wasn't good enough in Latin America. I had taken 2 years of Spanish in junior high, 2 years in high school, and a year in college, and I would still say that I was a beginner Spanish speaker. So they told me that my options were, based on my interest in natural resources and the environment, the Philippines or Mongolia.
Mm.
And my mom is from the Philippines, so I thought, well, that's ideal. I have relatives still in the Philippines. I wasn't so keen on Mongolia. That sounded really, really cold. And then, so I was considering that, and I thought, well, if I get Mongolia, I'll probably just reject that and hope I get the Philippines. And then I get my packet in the mail, and I got Ecuador.
Wow. So, I guess they needed people in Ecuador.
Yeah. So, but that worked out fine. Ecuador was a wonderful place to be, and it was close. I wanted to be close. I didn't want to go that far away, and I had 2 cell phones, so I could still be in contact with my husband and my family and my friends, and it was close to visit. I went home twice, and Pierre, my husband, came down 3 times to visit me.
Great.
Yeah, and there was email on my site. So the Peace Corps has changed a lot. I don't know what your impression is, but some people think that, you know, Peace Corps, you're out in a hut in the middle of nowhere, but now, if you're in a city area, like some of the Peace Corps volunteers in Ecuador who are living in the cities, they're on Facebook all day. You know, they're totally connected and communicating, and they're not cut off. They're not having to write long letters home or things like that.
Right. Yeah, I do think of it as being, I don't think of people being in a city. Mm-hmm. I think of it being more remote, although not necessarily disconnected, but more remote. So what kind of work would they do in a city? Were there people in the city in Ecuador?
Yeah, there are people in the city. So the Peace Corps, maybe I should just talk about the goals of the Peace Corps so people understand what it was funded, what the purpose was, and still is the purpose. So there are 3 goals of the Peace Corps. Number 1 is to help the people of interested countries in meeting their needs for trained men and women. That means helping them with specific projects in the country. So those projects could include education, health, HIV, AIDS, business and information, communication technology, environment, agriculture, and youth development. Then there were two other goals of the Peace Corps: to help promote a better understanding of Americans on the part of the people served. So we are serving as ambassadors to these countries, so they actually get to know real Americans and try to get rid of some of the stereotypes people might have of Americans. And then also to help promote a better understanding of other peoples on the part of Americans. So that is bringing my understanding of Ecuador and to America. And I have done some of that since coming back. I've been back 3 years. I was in Ecuador from 2006 to 2008. So I've done presentations at elementary schools and at the museum and talked about Ecuador. And also I was blogging when I was there. And I had a lot of friends and family visit me when I was in Ecuador.
Great.
Yeah. So in terms of what projects the people in the city might be, at least in Ecuador, those were mostly the youth and families volunteers. So they were working with some youth groups or health volunteers helping on different health issues. I had one friend who was helping with a blind group in Santo Domingo. So she was helping them get their own community center and other activities and things for them.
Interesting. Okay. And what did you do? You were...
So I was in the environmental group, so Environment and Natural Resources. So that was called Habitat Conservation when I was in Ecuador. Yeah.
And what part of Ecuador were you in?
So I was sort of in between the coast and Quito. So I was near Santo Domingo de los Sáchilas in a small site called Valle Hermoso. So I lived in Valle Hermoso. That population was about 2,000, and then I was supposed to be working in a smaller community called La Asunción, and that was about 400 people. And mostly it was working in the elementary school there, so I had a school garden, so the kids were helping me create a garden and this plot behind the school that wasn't really being used, so we were growing vegetables for their school lunches. And
now, did somebody tell you to do that? I mean,
so what you're supposed to do, you learn all these skills and training, community integration. So it's just simply hanging out with the people in the town and talking to them and seeing what they're interested in. Because, you know, the Peace Corps might have the goals of what they want you to do, but the people in the community might have another idea. So that's just balancing those two things. And what the people in the community wanted me to do was mostly work with the kids in the elementary school. They wanted me to teach English, which I did a bit of, and the school garden. And I taught computer classes for the teenagers and the adults, and also had an ecology club with the kids. But some of the pictures that I gave to Jack to go on the website are from El Bosque Protector La Perla. So this was a protected forest preserve near Valle Hermoso, and this was something that I just did on my own because I was interested in it. I was doing nighttime surveys of amphibians and reptiles, and that's where some of the pictures came from, because my master's was in frogs. I was studying frogs in the University of Michigan, and Ecuador was the perfect place for that. There's about 400 different species of frogs there.
So, okay, so the project emerged from the needs of the people in the community. I'm just wondering, I was in Senegal in a very tiny little town called Chamin for a manifestation, a big celebration of the anniversary of the town. My friend's great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather founded the town, and every year they have this big event. For which people go fly over from here for this party, and they don't even have electricity there, and they said the only outsiders that normally come are Peace Corps, but I don't know what they did though. And that's what I'm thinking. I wish I had asked, because they said that they had some Peace Corps people in that little town, and that was really a remote place.
Yeah, actually, one of my friends from grad school, Carrie Knowlton, she was in the Peace Corps in Senegal in a teeny little town, and so she ended up mostly working with the women in the town. And I think she was doing health stuff, and actually she's a nurse now, so that worked out well, just educating the people about health issues.
Yeah, probably something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else? You did a community garden, and was that your full-time occupation?
So there was the community garden, and then teaching English in the school, and then coming up with programs for the kids on the weekends, and then the computer classes, and then doing the nighttime surveys. So, but it's not like a regular, you know, 9-to-5 job. You're sort of setting your own schedule, mm-hmm. and also trying to find maybe your own. You just don't have as many resources, you know.
Sure.
So you've got to try to search for, you know, the lesson plan about this or that, or get it from the Peace Corps office. And
well, that's what I was wondering about. How? What kind of supervision is there? What kind of support is there? You're out there. This wasn't all that remote, but, well, a village of 400 people is pretty remote.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get, what kind of resources, or how do you deal with the and who's watching you? Who's making you're not just sleeping under a tree all day?
Yeah, so the Peace Corps, the way it's structured, each country has its own country director, so there's a central office. And in Ecuador, it was in Quito. And then underneath the country director is the are the people who are in charge of each program. So in Ecuador, when I was there, there was the Habitat Conservation Program, the Ag Program, the Youth and Families, and the Health Program. So each one of those programs had their own director. And this person was in charge of supervising the volunteers.
And that person traveled around?
Traveled around, but actually only made it around to visit each person in their site about once a year.
Oh.
But there also were the Peace Corps nurses who could help with any health issues, and you could call them up and, you know, they could tell you, go to the pharmacy and get this medicine, or come to Quito, or go to the local doctor, you know, and get some medicine mm-hmm. that way. But the other resource you have are your fellow volunteers. And I was lucky, since I was near Santo Domingo, there were other volunteers who were placed near there. And my main resource when I first got to my site was my friend Trent Blair, who had already been there a year, and so he was able to help me out,
mm-hmm.
you know, and spoke English. My Spanish wasn't so great when I first got there, and so he could show me around the town and tell me where everything was. And mm-hmm. then there's also Lindsay Harris and Megan Monroe, who were near me, and so it was nice to have that support network. So I would see them at least. We try to get together at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting to me is my mom came from the Philippines to America when she was 20. And now even to this day, growing up, we'd always go to these Filipino get-togethers. And I don't think I fully appreciated the importance of that to her mm-hmm. until I was in Ecuador and I needed to be with someone from my familiar culture that I could relate to. And mm-hmm. I could understand why my mom, even this past weekend, we were in Chicago and she was with her with people from her her community in the Philippines, Cagayan de Oro. So I think I perhaps gained a better understanding of my mother.
Got it in perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take a break, and then we will be back with the second half of the show to talk some more about the Peace Corps and Ariana's experience in Ecuador.
Padre grita otra vez. Que me malgastó mi futuro y su paz con mi manera de ser. Aunque lo escucho, ya estoy lejos de aquí. Cierro los ojos y ya estoy pensando en ti. Y soy rebelde cuando no sigo a los demás. Y soy rebelde cuando me quiero estar rabiar. Y soy rebelde. Nadie me conoce bien. Alguno de estos días voy a escapar para jugarme todo por un sueño.
Okay, I'm enjoying that music. That's really beautiful and unfamiliar to me. I never heard that before.
So that was Rebelde. They were a Mexican pop band, and they were really popular when I was in Ecuador, and they had a novella, a soap opera, and my friends in my community would watch the soap opera, and so I would, every night, I would go to their house and watch the soap opera, and it was so dramatic, and it's about these, you know, high schoolers who were also in a band, and so I learned Spanish that way because mm-hmm. I was really interested in it, and so I'm still fond of that band.
Right, sure. Spanish soap operas are, I think, worldwide. Well, I was in Senegal in the early 2000s, and people had television, but there wasn't all that much on. But also, everybody would gather, no matter who they were, what their level of education, at a certain time when the Spanish soap operas came on. with French subtitles, and we'd watch them every night. That was the big entertainment. That was really the main, other than sports, the sort of the main thing that was distributed by the different stations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have fond memories of Spanish soap operas,
yeah,
too.
Nice. Yeah, nice.
So you're going to talk a little bit about the living conditions?
Mm-hmm. Just so people understand how things were different for me in Ecuador. You talked about electricity and running water, right, in this small town in Senegal. So I was in a more developed area, though when my mom came and visited me, she was slightly appalled by my apartment, and she thought I was, you know, so poor and suffering, so she wanted to give me lots of money. But I actually didn't think it was that bad compared to other volunteers. Mm-hmm. I did have running water most of the time, but sometimes the water would stop running, so I would stock up on water and gallons when the water would turn off. And I had electricity most of the time, but I did have a mosquito net, and I had a cat that liked to climb the mosquito net and bat at the breaker and then would, you know, break the breaker. No. And then I would lose electricity.
Right.
But also I didn't have my shower sometimes worked, but it sometimes didn't. So I gave up on taking showers. So I would take bucket baths, mm-hmm, every day, and I had it down to a science. So I had my bucket and my little ladle, and I would fill the stove, mm-hmm, with all my pots, and then I would mix the warm water, the hot water, and the cool water, and I'd have it at just the perfect temperature, and then I would, you know, scoop the water out and pour it on myself and shampoo and soap up, right, and that's how I would. So now, you know, in if anything happens, like in America, these things are probably not going to happen, but like, you know, in comparison, I can survive.
It's no big deal.
I can,
right,
survive. Yeah. Yeah, I can take bucket baths. I can teach other people, right, how to take a bucket, right, bath. It's,
well,
fine.
Right. It's one of the real wonderful benefits of traveling to places that are fairly remote. You learn very quickly that it's not the end of the world if there's no electricity or there's no water. You sort of, people complain even in those places. It's not that people are happy about it, but you learn to adapt and survive. And you're right, it changes your perspective. Certainly I had the same experience. It changes your perspective coming home. What, the air conditioner is not working? Oh, my,
you,
God.
Know, like, it's really
end of the world.
Deal. Yeah, and the other thing, too, that maybe you've experienced this when you travel is just like the slow pace of life, and you appreciate that, and then you come back to America and everything's go, 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 but it doesn't have to be that way, you know? Like, everything was just slower, and I appreciated that. But also, things were so exciting. The culture was so different, and mm-hmm, every day you never knew what was going to happen,
right,
and that made it really fun.
Right. Yeah. No, that's wonderful. Getting enmeshed in a culture and really getting excited about the day-to-day life experiences and following up the next day, what's happening with this one? Right. I mean, that's something that you heard about, and then it takes place, and you get involved in the events. Yeah, I've had that experience too. It's really great.
Yeah, and then also just little things, like when I would go out and look for these reptiles and amphibians, one of the most exciting things was seeing an eyelash palm pit viper, and it was near the trail, and I took a picture, but I didn't need to get any closer.
Right.
And then some of the other wildlife that I saw there, I posted a picture of a tent-making bat. Have you heard of these bats?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so you can see in the picture how they chew holes on either side of the leaf to make it fold over so they can make a little tent for them to, mm-hmm, sleep in, and all the amazing tree frogs that we saw, the brightly colored ones, and also in terms of the goals of the Peace Corps and helping Americans gain a better understanding of people living in these other countries. My dad visited me, and I got to take him around and meet people in my community. And there's a picture of him with the kids in the garden, mm-hmm, at La Asunción. And then we also went on a trip to the Amazon, and some exotic foods that we tried. They cooked some grubs, the larva form, and there's a picture of my dad eating one of those, and they tasted like bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried some lemon ants in the Amazon. So these are ants on the tree, and you can just pick them up and put them on your tongue, and they taste lemony. And in Ecuador, they eat guinea pig, which is a good small-scale ag that they can have in their own home. The guinea pigs don't need much room. They just need to be fed alfalfa, and then you've got your protein. So it's common in the Andean area. So I did try some guinea pig.
Mm.
Yeah.
We had a guinea pig once. It bit me, so I'm very negative about guinea pigs.
Well, maybe you'd like to try one and,
right,
eat one.
I'd like to cook one. That's probably right. Very good. All right, so we probably have everybody inspired now about the Peace Corps, hopefully. So how does one join the Peace Corps if you're feeling tempted to go off for 27 months and have this kind of wonderful experience?
Yeah, I mean, if you're inclined, I definitely recommend investigating it. So you can go to the Peace Corps website. It's just peacecorps.gov and start the application process. It does take a while. You have to get health clearance, so the application process could take 9 to 12 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it's also good to have some volunteer service in your background. So if you are thinking, you know, in some years in the future you want to join the Peace Corps, then maybe get some experience in the program area that you're interested in, mm-hmm. and work on language skills for the area you want to go to.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's lots of stuff going on for the Peace Corps. I think the Folklife Festival, that might have ended in D.C. already. They had a special section about the Peace Corps. And then at the end of September in D.C., they're having a 50th anniversary celebration for the Peace Corps. So if you're in the area and are inclined, then you should go check that out in D.C. I'll be there with a bunch of my Peace Corps folks.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Say the name of the website again.
Peace Corps.
Just peacecorps.gov.
Peacecorps.gov,
okay,
yeah. All the information
enough.
Is going to be on there. And like I mentioned to Carol, there is no upper age limit for the Peace Corps. The minimum age is 18. The average age is about 27, mm-hmm. or 28, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And why does it take so long? You're saying the health clearance takes a year?
Yeah,
so could take that long?
Yeah, I mean, if you have some funny thing like, you know, planter's wart or something, I don't know. Someone told me they had some silly little thing that delayed the health process, but you have to get clearance from the dentist and from the, you know, the general doctor and get all this stuff so that they know that, you know, you're not going to get to the country and then have some problem that can't be treated,
mm-hmm.
and then be sent back. And plus you got to get all the vaccinations and,
right,
yeah, before you go.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the other thing about Peace Corps that maybe people aren't as familiar with is that I developed wonderful friendships when I was in the Peace Corps, and the people who were in the Peace Corps with me are still my best friends to this day. Like my friend Maggie Moreau, she was in my training community, and she ended up being 12 hours away from me. Our sites were that far away, but we were committed to each other, and so we saw each other every month, even though we were that far away,
right.
and we'd text each other every day, and those people were your support network there. And then when you come back, some people do have culture shock being back in America. Their own home culture is foreign to them and sometimes have trouble adjusting.
Sure, I can imagine.
And those are the people that can relate to what you're dealing with.
Right, right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to think of the Peace Corps now with Facebook and texting and all of these ways of communicating, which certainly weren't part of the experience in 1961 when it was developed, but makes it certainly, it really changes the nature of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it was interesting. In Ecuador, there was some unrest with Rafael Correa. There were some protests. The police union, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but anyway, so there was a sort of general strike all over the country, and I heard from my friends that the Peace Corps volunteers in Quito, they just weren't even leaving the office, but the post they put was like, oh, but pizza's on sale, so we're gonna go get pizza. Like, there's
right.
all this unrest happening, but they were fine, and they could tell, you know, the people back home that they were fine through
right.
Facebook, and they were just eating pizza.
Right. How much more time do we have, Jack? I just want to get an idea. What's that, 1 minute? Okay. Did you want to quickly talk about what happened to your boss?
Yeah, so the other thing about the Peace Corps, I mean, it's not all wonderful and rosy.
I know.
And probably the hardest thing for me being in Ecuador was the crime. That pretty much all of us were a victim of some sort of crime. I was pickpocketed and had my backpack stolen. But also, you're moved from the country, so there might not be as much supervision. And our country director of Ecuador, perhaps because he had been there so long that he didn't, so he got in trouble, and he was convicted of selling Peace Corps vehicles to a private group and then pocketing the money. So he was just charged, he has to pay $33,000 in restitution and 6 months probation.
That's some nerve, selling vehicles.
Yeah.
That's not like stealing paper clips.
Wow. Yeah. So.
Wow. Okay. And we don't really have time, unfortunately. There was Do you want to talk about this? The law recently that was
proposed? I was going to say though about my country director, the office of the inspector general. One of the, at least this is what I heard, that the one of the volunteers alerted the DC office and they did investigate. So even though this person was corrupt, at least the Peace Corps did act on it and take care of the problem.
Right.
But yeah, there's been a lot of attention about...
There's not actually a law. There's a memorandum of understanding that was signed, right?
Yeah, I'm not... I haven't followed up with that and seen if any of those bills got passed, but there's been a lot of attention. There was a 2020 report about the Peace Corps and people, volunteers who have been victims of crimes, sexual assault, and... some Congress people are trying to change the Peace Corps and mandate, you know, that every country has rape test kits and does mandatory counseling for survivors of sexual assault, and we'll follow up. So
right. So this is not a good way to end this this talk. We end up sounding that the Peace Corps is a dangerous place to serve. And in fact, for most people, it's probably a wonderful experience.
Yeah, and it is a life-changing experience. Yeah. And there are other wonderful advantages. It's easier to get a federal job when you come back from the Peace Corps. You have non-competitive eligibility. There are other programs. You can get your master's through the Peace Corps. Yeah. There's a program for that. There's a fellows program. So all these advantages. But also just keep in mind that you're serving far from America and there are dangers.
Right. Okay. Let's leave it at that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Ariana. It's been really interesting having you here. And you brought some wonderful music to the program. And please come again and join us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Moby, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.